Welcome to the Nasty Cast.
And I never would have probably tried Spam if it weren't for my dad.
I do a lot of Zumba.
Look at the meaty thighs on this Italian player.
Well, last I heard, he had some Velcro gloves and he was hanging out with some sheep in Montana.
I was freaking brothers every way like MJ.
Zardoz.
How dare you, Luis Valbuena's a national treasure.
I'm a pepper jack guy.
Well, I most definitely have a throbbing Corey Klue boner.
So you're delicious and sticky.
Do it. Now, I'm the rapping genie, and I'm here to say eating your vegetables is A-okay. Because, you know, Shazam, he's a genie, but he's also a basketball player, or he was. I don't know. I didn't watch Shazam. Did you guys watch that movie?
No.
With who?
Shaq.
Okay. I thought you were talking about the one with Sinbad, which that allegedly doesn't exist.
It's not real. It's a whole phenomena about your mind collectively creating this thing.
Yeah, and that one got me. Because I could have swore that there was a freaking Sinbad movie with him as a freaking genie called Shazam or Kazam, whichever one is not the Shaq one.
Kazam is the Shaq one, so Shazam was the fake one. But yeah, no, I get it, because that sounds like the most early 90s thing in history is Sinbad as a genie, and I would pay to watch that. And you know, to be honest, with all the weird stuff going on around that, I'll bet they make that like at some point soon. I think they get him together and they're like, hey, let's just make it, see if it, you know, put it on Netflix, make some money, and I would watch the hell out of it.
Well, he's not doing anything else these days. Like, honestly, I remember hearing that it was announced to me that it doesn't exist, and it blew my mind. I could not believe it. So I had to look it up, and it just came up as whatever that's called, like the Berenstain Bears thing. There was just an X-Files episode about that, too, and I already forgot what it was called, the something effect.
Hmm. Oddly enough, Chris Archer was at Rays Fest on Saturday reading Berenstain Bears books to kids.
That's very bizarre, but good for Chris Archer.
Yeah.
He's like he and Joey Votto are like not corporeal people. Like, they're these mystical beings who have taken the shape of baseball players. They're that smart.
Kind of like a centaur?
Kind of, except human shaped at least. Oh, it's more like Max Scherzer. Since he has the two different colored eyes, he's actually two baseball demons that have been fused together into one amazing baseball person.
Ooh. You know what's like listening to three baseball demons fused together? The Nasty Cast. And this is episode 142 of that very podcast, where we shall feature the great Yancey Eaton from Dear Mr. Fantasy and the Pop Goes Your World podcast. We're going to talk about top 40 outfielders according to Fantrax.com ADP. I'm your host, Nathan Dock, and you can find me on Twitter at Nathan Dock. And joined as always by the great Van Lee.
Hello, happy to be here. Of course, we will be hearing from Yancey Eaton, who, by the way, is his claim to fame is that one time Eddie Rosario waved to him from the stands.
Oh, now you spoiled the whole story.
is that a story that can be spoiled? That's my question.
It spoiled itself.
Okay.
Unless you disagree, Ron Rigney.
I don't disagree at all. How do you know that? He hasn't even been on the show yet.
Ooh, magic.
Wow. What kind of sorcery is that, Van?
The same kind of sorcery that fused Max Scherzer together.
Say Tarantino directs every episode of this podcast.
Well, it's a good thing he likes feet then, because I've got these massive feet. So as gross as that's going to be.
Oh, what? I could have gone my whole life without you describing your feet.
you know how many times people say
I don't know
that
why
to
that
me.
Me out.
Well, I'm 6'4". I've got matching feet. They're large.
What size shoe do you wear, man?
14.
Whoa!
I'm a big guy. It happens.
You know what that means?
It's called proportion. What's that? Big shoes?
Big socks.
Oh, socks. There you go.
Yeah. Nice. Jesus. Yancey, you can find Yancey Eaton. You can ask him what shoe size he wears at Yancey Eaton with an O on Twitter. You can also tweet us at NastyCastBGFS is the podcast handle. Van is at ManlyVanLee. Ron is at TheRealMade. And if you're listening to us on iTunes, please take a moment to give us a rating and review. By God, we've actually got a few of them over the course of the last week or so. And we thank you from the bottom of our hearts for that. It really does help us out. I think that a lot of people out there don't realize that when you're a small independent podcast like this, you know, to gain visibility, to show up, like when you search for fantasy baseball at all, it requires, you know, the more reviews that you get, essentially, the higher up that you will be on the quote unquote ratings, so to speak. And so it really, really, really does help us out a lot. And if you also want to help us out, you can check us out on Patreon, patreon.com/nastypod. That'll also get you a free copy of the 2018 Nasty Draft Guide, which will be coming out very soon and perhaps in chapters as we finish them. And some bonus podcasts too, some positional preview podcasts. And also listen to Fantrax Dynasty Baseball, everybody. It's the three of us talking about strictly Dynasty. We're going over farm systems right now. We just did, went over my top 100 list, and we did a rookie draft. So you can check that out. It's actually got its very own feed now. If you just search for Fantrax Dynasty Baseball, it should pop up. And so if you don't want to listen to every single podcast in the Fantrax Radio family, then you can just subscribe to that one. So there you go. Anything else, boys, before we kick off the episode?
I just want to point out that last week was the very first episode of the Launch Angle podcast, a new podcast I'm doing with Jeff Zimmerman and Rob Silver. Check that out. Again, it has its own feed as well on the Fantrax Radio Network, which we just changed the name of, and I already forgot it.
I think it's the Fantrax Podcast Network now.
That's it.
You bring it up.
Yes, so follow that on Twitter as well. Shout out to, you mentioned our iTunes reviews, Kurt is one of our new reviewers. So shout out to Kurt. Thank you for giving us a great glowing 5-star review. It was a very good review. It was very word I can't think of because I'm tired. It was good. Let's just go with that.
It was very word I can't think of because I'm tired. It was.
Indeed.
I think good is a definite good. It's a good descriptor of that review. Anytime you get compared to Tide Pods, I mean, that's.
Oh, there's that one too. Yeah.
Yeah. You can't ask for anything more than that. Yeah. And the only thing I got is over at Big Guy Fantasy Sports, my NL prospect article for the spring training came out. I got a couple things in a hopper over there that might be coming out in the next couple weeks. And we got started doing our spring training previews over at Fantastic. So check me out over there as well. I'll have a couple days here and there in between now in the beginning of spring training. So check out our stuff over there. Always good previews of everything we do over there.
Absolutely. And you can find my work at Razzball and at Fantrax as well, doing some written content there. So I think that pretty much covers it. So we're going to take a break here. On the flip side, we will be joined by the great E.N.C. Eaton. Enjoy the show.
Nasty. Nasty.
Let's do this.
All right, and welcome back to the Nasty Cast. Joining us now from the fantastic podcast, Dear Mr. Fantasy and Pop Goes Your World, the one, the only, Yancey Eaton. Welcome back to the Nasty Cast, my friend.
Hey, I'm going to go ahead and just pull the reins in and take control of the show. That's cool. So I don't know, Nate, how long have we known each other? Years at this point now, right?
Oh, nigh upon 5 years, I'd say.
Yeah, something like that. We go way back. I was one of the first people to, you know, leave a review on the original NastyCast podcast. Mm. One of the original listeners. Like, I think you and I have a good rapport. You have my number. I have yours. Like, it's all cool. It's all gravy. I've been listening to the new podcast with Fanley and Ron, and you guys have been killing it. I'm a huge fan. You know, rest in peace, Joe and Jesse, but I like where the show is heading. Why the hell didn't you tell me that Ron literally lives like 2 minutes away from me? This never came up in conversation ever. Like, I found out about this last night, guys. I got pulled over. I ride my bike to and from work because I care about the environment, which I know is like a really pathetic thing to say, but I got pulled over at like 12 o'clock at night after work and was basically like detained for an hour because I fit the description of a person that was, I guess, stealing houses. And I asked the cop, I'm like, what's the description? And she just looked at me and I say, really handsome? And she gave me this look like, I'm going to murder you in the streets. Didn't think I was funny at all. But then, you know, I'm tweeting about it. And then Ron hops on. He's like, hey, you live in Fort Myers. That's neat. So do I. Which I thought was seriously like mind blowing. And the fact that this was never divulged to me sooner, that this guy is on your podcast, you never thought to bring this up. I know this is the longest intro ever, but basically, like, what the hell, Doc? And that's what I have to say about.
Well, I gotta say, I guess I dropped a ball on that one. I didn't remember that you were in the Fort of Myers.
I talk about it all the time. Like,
well, see, in my opinion, it's Florida's Florida. I don't know where the panhandle is. I don't know what's at the bottom of it. Will Smith is somewhere in there because he's singing about Miami. That's all I know about.
Frozen iguanas that fall out of the tree. You know, it's like a whole different planet, really. You know.
Wow, you went there. Frozen iguanas. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a regular on the show now. At this point,
definitely not the first time that's come up on this podcast. So
that might have been the Fantrax show, though. To be fair.
Yeah, true. Could have.
You got to watch out for those coconuts and frozen iguanas. They'll they'll freaking cut your life short right there. No, I don't know.
Y'all don't understand. Florida. I never seen so many Dominican women with cinnamon tans. Anybody? I'm singing Miami by Will Smith, and no one is going for it. Come on.
Well, singing isn't really the word.
Fair enough.
And busting rhymes.
How do I transition out of that?
I was gonna say this is where you try to get us back on track. Like,
man, I got nothing. I'm like stumped right now. I don't know. You know what state doesn't look like a big floppy wang? Is the state of Chicago, even though that's not a state.
That transition looks like a big floppy wang, though, I think.
The Cubs of Chicago signed Yu Darvish this past week, gentlemen. 6 years, $126 million. Yancey, I'm interested to get your take on this signing. Does it, first, what was your reaction to Yu Darvish finally signing with the Cubs? And do you think this affects his value at all?
I think what you just said, him finally signing with the Cubs, that basically states everything that I was feeling. Everybody knew that he was going to the Cubs. This whole Brewer stuff, I think that was just stuff that was thrown out by his agents to make other teams feel like they were serious about signing him, when I don't think that that was the case at all. This was a foregone conclusion. Everybody knew he was going to the Cubs. I'm just glad that it happened. And, you know, we expected this whole flood wave of free agent signings immediately afterwards. That still hasn't happened, which I don't understand yet. But I like the move for Darvish. Like, spoiler, I think Yu Darvish is very, very good. I think the World Series, performance or lack of a performance is kind of bumping him down unfairly and unnaturally. I don't think that that is any indicator of what he's going to do. You know, he goes from Texas, which is, you know, one of the worst offensive, you know, environments for pitchers, to, you know, Chicago, which isn't great. It's actually almost exactly neutral for pitchers. And I like the move. I think the outfield defense is better. I like everything about it. I still think Darvish has like one of those complete FU seasons left in him. So I'm excited. I want to see what Darvish can do. You know, over the last 4 years, the highest K per nine of anybody in baseball not named Jose Fernandez. So that's quite the feat.
Ron, anything to add to that?
Kind of the way that we preface this is, would I draft him as an ace? And it kind of depends upon how you define the word ace, because I think there's only really a handful of those guys that we can choose from in drafts. But I will say, when I'm looking at this ADP, I would not be all that upset if I had him as my SP1 if I decided to wait a little while to go with some pitching later on. And there's definitely a couple of guys that are on this ADP that I would probably take him above. I think I drafted him before Robbie Ray. I drafted him before Zach Greinke, Justin Verlander. So I'd bump him up a little bit as far as the average ADP here, because he's going 15th. So I think it's a good move. I like the offense behind him. And you know, like Yancey said too, which, by the way, I opened my window and I think I can actually hear Yancey out the window. We're so close. So
through his podcast, Chad?
Yes, I can.
That's creepy.
So, yeah. So I like the move. You know, I think it was just kind of a foregone conclusion that he was either going to go there or going to, I don't know if he was ever going to go to the Yankees, but one of those two teams was going to pony up the cash. And so I don't think it's a big shocker that he went to Chicago.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and agree. I think that this will raise his value like a little bit, or his draft stock anyway. I believe that, we could probably bump him up in ADP by maybe a half round or so. On Fantrax, he's at 55 overall. I think I would take him pretty close to DeGrom, who's at 37, so bump him up a few picks. Like you said, Ron, Robbie Ray, Zach Greinke, I think I would feel better owning Yu Darvish than Justin Verlander at this point. So yeah.
Should we say that we love Zach Greinke so he doesn't call us?
Oh, that was no slight on Zach Greinke.
Yeah.
He doesn't have the crazy eyes to come and stab us while we sleep. He's Yeah, he's the case. He actually stole my argument, Nate, which is Jacob deGrom, I feel, is a kind of a similar pitcher, but not really. Looking at the statistics, of course, Jacob deGrom doesn't strike out quite as many, but he's felt a little healthier, I guess I'd say, over the last couple of years, even though really I think the innings totals probably evened out over the last 3 years, I'd say. I think the further Darvish gets from the injury, I think the better we're going to see him get before the eventual decline. He's, what, 31 now, so he's kind of getting up there, but I agree with Yancey. I think there might be another one of those seasons where he just throws 220 innings and strikes out over 300 because he nearly did it before the surgery. I think the question was draft opens as an ace. Absolutely, but he's a low-end ace. It's clear this season that you've got your top four, and then there's the next set of players. I think he's definitely in the next set of players. The thing is with DeGrom, who, again, I kind of associate the two together simply because I think ERA-wise, they usually hover about the 3 to 3.5 range. DeGrom's going 37, and Darvish is 55. I mean, I'd rather have Darvish at 55 at that point, even though I do like DeGrom. So there's plenty of upside, and I think with the innings totals, which he got to, what, 186 last year, so we're already back at, you know, ace workload this season. I think he clears 200, barring some more injuries. So definitely a good pickup for the Cubs. It's the state of pitching. I mean, that's just kind of, you just have to pay for it. Even in this market where no one pays for anything, you still pay for pitching. But I wonder what was the trigger. What was the final nail in the coffin, I guess we'll say, that finalized this deal and got it done?
Are you trying to prod me into saying something racist here?
No, it's rhetorical. I'm asking the fan trap, so we just need to sit here for 20 minutes. He's racist towards Iranians, because remember, Darvish is both.
Is he?
Nothing. Yes. Did you guys not know this? He's half Japanese, half Iranian.
I've seen this on Twitter, yes.
Yeah, which is a bizarre combination, but I'm all for it if it makes, you know, these amazing pictures. Eugenics!
That leads me to ask, are you serious?
Oh my God. Moving on. We're going to talk about outfielders today. And there are so many to speak of. We're actually going to break them into two separate podcasts. And this one is going to be focused on the top 40 outfielders. And so we're going to start off, as always, with ADP Wars.
War has changed. It's no longer about nations, ideologies, or ethnicity.
Instead, it's more about laser show out in Baxton, Pedroia.
I wrote down Mazzara here, and I disagree with myself.
I'm gonna give a slight edge to Eric Hosmer.
Well, you can't make us sound any dumber than we already do.
Well, this is all great and all, but I'm glad that you told me as a host of the show that we're going to be doing that, because I had no idea that we're going to do two shows on outfielders. So thank you for that, Mr. Doc, and I really appreciate it.
Okay, I was hoping I wasn't the only one that missed the vote on that. So that was that was both everybody. Okay, cool. All right.
He probably told Yancey, but not us.
Yeah.
Well, at top 40, I don't know.
He did send a show outline that clearly says top 40 bargains, top 40 busts.
Well, I knew top 40. Yeah. I just didn't know we were doing two shows.
Talk about part two. The outfielders, like
who needs you? Well,
okay, this is where my brain is. A guy who's been doing this podcast for 140 episodes, or and not used to. I don't know. This is what we've always done, you know? So, like, in my brain, that's how it's always been. So that's just what we're going to do, is split outfielders into two episodes. But you guys weren't on last year, so I totally didn't think to, like, explain that.
That's a great way to get through life. It's the way it's always been done.
Yeah, well, at least we knew that we're focusing on the top 40.
We do now. All right, let's do it.
Perfect. All right. ADP Wars. Everybody's favorite segment, sweeping the nation. We're going to take two similarly positioned outfielders, pit them against each other, We're going to use the Fantrax average draft position for this exercise. And we're going to start off with Andrew Benintendi, whose ADP is 42 overall, versus Marcell Ozuna, whose ADP is 45. So, Yancey, we shall start with you. Andrew Benintendi or Marcell Ozuna?
I think it's Andrew Benintendi, who for some reason is not like the sexy player. Nobody like, you know, high fives you or like sends you like flame emojis whenever you draft Andrew Benintendi in like a mock draft. Nobody does. He's just super boring. But the last couple of years, I've really found myself gravitating towards like these safety blanket guys, like a Yelich, like a Benintendi, you know, guys that can steal and they have a decent batting average and they hit, you know, 20, 25 home runs. I know it's not sexy, but I am firmly on the camp of we have seen the best of Marcell Ozuna. I know he's going to a different situation with a better team that wants to win now, better offensive environment. I get all of those things. But I do not foresee Marcell Ozuna hitting over 300 again. I don't see him sniffing 280, to be honest with you. I mean, for his career, he's basically like a 277 hitter. That's what he is. So I think there's going to be a ton of regression there as far as like the batting average goes. I don't think he hits as many home runs. For me, it looks close on paper as far as the ADP goes, but give me the Andrew Benintendi who's still on the ascension, who is still, you know, there's people out there, like we've been talking about Howie Kendrick for years. Remember when everybody kept saying that he was going to win a batting title just because of like his plate approach? I firmly believe that with Benintendi, 300 is, I would say if his career high is a 300 season, I would be vastly completely disappointed in that. It's 320, it's 330. He has it in him. And, you know, this Red Sox lineup is legit. And as soon as they add JD Martinez, which I 100% absolutely believe they're going to do. I don't think the Arizona stuff is real. He's just the safest, most perfect like stat compiler you can possibly imagine. I want to build a whole team up with him. So it's Benintendi for me. It's actually not close. Like I said, I'm so down on Ozuna, even though he went in like the third round in the mixed labor draft tonight. I don't know if you guys saw that. That was a little bit questionable, but yeah, I'm rambling. I told myself I was going to keep a clean show. So Benintendi over Ozuna. I think Ozuna takes a major step back this year.
I think for me, it's a little closer than that. And I think it comes down to at that point when you're putting your roster together in the draft, I think it just kind of comes down to what you're looking at more so as far as do you want to get, you know, the 2020 upside, or do you want to go for a little bit more power? I will say, though, I agree with Yancey in the fact that I think Ozuna is going to come back down to earth a little bit. I don't think that 37 homers is a realistic expectation. I think that's going to be maybe around maybe 28 to 30, which is still nothing to sneeze at. But I think when you look at your roster, I think it's going to be easier later on in your draft to find guys that can replace that power, as opposed to guys that are going to give you 20 to 25 homers, 20, 25 steals, maybe more than that in each category. You know, the 271 batting average, I think Benintendi is going to take a step forward this year. And I think it's going to be, pretty positive pick at ADP 42, and I think he's going to outperform that value. But I will say I wouldn't sleep on Ozuna either, but I think I'm definitely taking Benintendi here. But I was able to do a mock draft, army draft earlier. We did a 10-teamer, which, by the way, I forgot how when you draft a 10-team league, your team looks like an all-star team compared to 15-teamers. Mm-hmm. But I was able to get these guys both back-to-back, and I'll have to look at the rounds, but felt pretty good about that. But I think Benintendi takes the step this year, and I think that you're gonna be pretty happy with where you get him if you can get him around ADP 42.
Yeah, for me, it's I'm with Yancey. It's Benintendi for me, and it's not really that close. And the difference between these two guys for me is the speed, where you're getting nothing at all with Marcell Ozuna. Andrew Benintendi, I feel safe, like easily projecting 15 stolen bases, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if he went 20 again, but. So, you know, the power with Ozuna, that's why you're drafting him, where you're getting him. But power is a lot easier to find nowadays. And I think that Benintendi can push 30 home runs this year himself. If you look last year, 34% hard contact for Benintendi, just 11.2% home run for fly ball. And even as a lefty in Boston, I mean, that should have been higher. I don't see any way that he doesn't hit like 25 home runs this year. I wouldn't be surprised if he had a 30-20 season, to be honest. And I think he can easily hit 280, maybe 300, 100 runs, 100 RBI. I'm going to try and sneak myself some Benintendi pretty much in all my drafts this year, if my draft slot allows for it. So I see big things from Benintendi. So not only am I drafting him just on the floor, like with the stolen bases, I'm drafting him thinking that there's a lot of upside built into that ADP of 42 as well.
You know, I have my rundown here. I have my list of players that we're debating. I went ahead and skipped over this one, and I filled out the rest of them. But all along, I've been attending to finish this part of the
draft. Oh my god, delete your account.
I don't have a whole lot to add. I agree with I probably side a little more with Ron than the other two guys because I do think Ozuna has a bit of upside. But if I'm drafting, 80% of the time I'm going to take Benintendi here. I think the only other time I'm going to take Ozuna is if I'm, you know, sitting there with D. Gordon on my team or, you know, just a ton of speed, Trey Turner already. And that I know I want to get some extra power because I do think the power is pretty legit with Ozuna. I agree the average isn't going to be there. And I think 275, 280 is a reasonable number for him to hit. So I'm not afraid of that. And he's with a good organization who does a lot of good coaching. So we'll see kind of what he does going forward. But it's been Benintendi for me here.
Can I just say one more thing about this quickly?
No, moving on.
So if you just go about range of outcomes, right? Range of outcomes, you would agree that Ozuna last year had, you know, his 99th percentile, talking about like the best possible outcome from hitting 37 home runs, like I said, his batting average 312. That was fantastic. It's only going to go down from there. Whereas Benintendi, like we said, he is on the ascension. If you go by even like his 20th, you know, percent, I know I'm saying the numbers wrong, but like, you know, an outcome that's not even that far-fetched, say Ozuna regresses to, you know, minus 10 home runs and he's sitting at 27 and Benintendi goes up 7 home runs and all of a sudden he has 27. You're literally sitting with the exact same power potential between the two, which I said totally possible as far as range of outcomes goes. Oh yeah, but also Benintendi has 20 to 25 steals.
Very
like
true.
I just don't think it's not even an argument. Like you're gonna pass up one player, like I said, much, you know, just in a completely a much better environment, the skill set, everything like that, and speed being so rare, why pass up somebody for 6 or 7 home runs? You can make up that 6 or 7 home runs in a draft like that.
Easily.
It's so easy. Like I want all the speed I can get. My whole outfield this year, my whole goal is, you know, if I take like a Cruz, that's fine. If I take Aaron Judge, you know, I'm not going to hate anybody on that. Obviously you have to back it up with speed, but if you can build an outfield with all of these guys, like I said, like the Christian Yeliches, the Domingo Santanas, those type of guys, I really think that sets you up super, super nice. Like that's my whole goal this season.
And I want to point out too, that I'm going to gloat a little because I remember last year, the hype was on Andrew.
There we go.
On Alex Bregman. I know. Everybody was on the Bregman train. He was being drafted just far too early for his
Bregmania.
Value. And he honestly had a pretty good season. But because of where people were taking him, they just didn't get the value. The whole time I'm pointing, Benintendi, why do we not care about this guy? It's a similar style, you know, young player coming into it. Why do we not like this guy as much? I ended up with him on so many leagues, and it was awesome. It was perfect. So I think you're right, though, Yancey. He is a bit of a sleeper still for some reason, and I think it's just because he's slightly boring compared to a lot of people. But, man, this kid has a lot of talent, so I do like him a lot.
Very good. We'll move on then to our second matchup here, and that is AJ Pollock at 58 versus Byron Buxton, one spot behind him at 59. So, Yancey, who do you got here, AJ Pollock or Byron Buxton?
I think it's Buxton. I really struggle trying to say something original and not just regurgitate. We're all going to talk about, well, AJ Pollock gets hurt a lot, and that's going to
be
like the main...
if you literally regurgitated on the podcast.
That would be original.
You'd be a first, so yeah.
Why can't I be serious? Why can't I ever be serious on a podcast? I don't maybe it's just my, I don't know, whatever.
Dude, we're called the Nasty Cast. Yeah. Like the boring library dudes are not here.
I've talked about Frasier like 4 straight episodes, so.
Yeah, you have. Thanks for that, by the way. I wanted to say something original. I really did. AJ Pollock, whenever he plays, is fantastic. Let's be honest. But he played, 110 games, 115 games, something like that. It's so risky where you have to take him, guys. If he's going to be missing 40 or 50 games, it strips all the value from it. I mean, in a rotisserie league, like I would consider it just because that speed is super valuable and he can do it for you, I guess, if you really need speed that bad. Like, say you missed out on, you know, Billy Hamilton, you missed out on D. Gordon, Eduardo Nunez isn't sitting there anymore. Like, I understand sometimes people get desperate, but it's just so hard to invest such an early round pick on somebody that it's not just one lingering injury. It's every possible injury you can imagine. So I'm not really a Byron Buxton guy. A couple of years ago, I traded him straight up for Steven Strasburg in a dynasty league. And it was one of the best decisions I ever made. But now it's, you know, Buxton's trendy again. People are starting to believe, like, oh yeah, this still is the, you know, the number one prospect in baseball for how many years? 3 or 4 years. I don't have a great reason to believe in Buxton. I feel like he's going to be super, super streaky in rotisserie leagues. I think he's like an auto draft in points leagues. I think he's going to be like Justin Upton is, where there's going to be weeks where he absolutely kills you and you are on the verge of dropping him. But I have to go Buxton here simply because AJ Pollock just cannot stay healthy to save his life.
Well, AJ Pollock gets hurt a lot, so okay. No, the thing is too with AJ Pollock with me, I think we've kind of seen him kind of reach what he's going to be, which isn't all bad when he is playing. Buxton, on the other hand, the hype train is it gets everybody back on every single year, and it gets there. And I mean, I don't know necessarily if you would call. I mean, I don't know. Would you guys call Buxton's season last year a success or just kind of a middle of the road season? How would you categorize it?
Compared to his career, I'd call it a success based on how poor he'd been in the past.
He's 23.
Yeah. He's still insanely young. He did it 16 homers last year. He stole 29 bases. He's got to strike out less. I mean, that's kind of, to me, the same thing as saying A.J. Pollock is hurt all the time. Buxton's K rate of 35% then 29% has to come down. He's got to up the OBP a little bit and get on base and be able to steal. So I think I would go Buxton here just based on the upside. I'm not saying I wouldn't take AJ Pollock, but I would definitely take Buxton over him, especially when we're talking about this ADP. I wouldn't be opposed to getting Pollock a little bit later and taking, you know, I don't know if you call it taking a flyer on a guy that has 30 steal upside and could do the things that he can do when he's healthy. But I'd have to get AJ Pollock at a little bit of a value. I'm definitely not in on him at ADP 58, as opposed to getting Buxton around the same time frame with his upside, his age. You put in all the intangibles. If he puts it all together, he could be a star. AJ Pollock has kind of shown what he's kind of topped out as. So I'm going Buxton.
I also am going to go with Buxton here, not for any real different reasons. You know, there's sort of some downside built in with Pollock where he's going, whereas there's more upside built in with Byron Buxton. I mean, you can still have the potential of 20 home runs and 40 steals, which is honestly not that much of a stretch. Might not come with a great batting average, because to be honest, I'm really not sure if he's ever going to be a great plate discipline guy. I think he'll always probably strike out a lot more than we had hoped. But at the same time, he might have more power than we thought he was ever going to have as well. But the speed is what you're buying him for, and I would not be surprised to see those stolen base totals continue to trend upward this year. He was cut once last year, one time. He stole 29 bases.
Oh, wow. I missed that. That's incredible.
Yeah. And most of them were in a row too. Like, he is just so, so fast, and you could see his confidence just growing as the season went along, and they were screwing with him still, like throughout the season, like have a leg kick, get rid of the leg kick, bring it back now. And so finally towards the end of the season, he found something that worked, and he figured out, you know, like I said, how to steal bases more efficiently over the second half. And, you know, hit for power and, you know, use his skill set to his advantage. And the OPS splits, well, I guess I was going to do WRC plus, because I think that is the starkest contrast between the first half and the second half. His WRC plus in the first half was 59, and in the second half it was 130. So he was over twice as good in the second half, right? That's what that means? Yeah, sure, close enough. But anyway, I'm taking Buxton here at the same price as Pollock for the upside rather than the downside.
Real quick question, guys, from a contextual standpoint, assuming JD Martinez signs with the Diamondbacks and they don't install the humidor, does that do anything as far as like your projection for AJ Pollock? I mean, obviously you have to like him more, but does that move the needle at all for you guys? Would you take him over somebody like Byron Buxton if both of those things kind of like fell in the Diamondbacks' favor?
Not for me, no. That wouldn't be enough to move the needle, just because that injury is just, you know, it's always looming, his injury history. And so a nice bump like that. At this point, I'm not even sure if we're going to get a humidor. I don't know what the hell they're doing. It's driving me nuts. But yeah, that wouldn't be enough to push me over the top.
I think I agree with that. I mean, that wouldn't change my evaluation of him at all. However, I actually am going to go with AJ Pollock here. It's a really close one for me. But I mean, you just mentioned a number, Nate, weighted runs created plus. Pollock in 466 plate appearances last year had a 103. Buxton in 511 plate appearances had a 90. So even just last year, he beat Buxton in that regard. And if we look at Pollock as a guy who, what he can do in a full season, the last time he did it, of course, was a few years ago. He had 20 homers, 39 steals. So 20-40 guy. He was similar to those numbers last year with a little bit less of steals. The way I'm going to look at it is this way. When Pollock plays, he's really good. When Buxton plays, he can be really bad. So the knock on Pollock isn't he's going to be bad at any point. It's going to be, hey, if he puts together a full season, he's going to have a really good season. I really don't care which way you go with your team. I think there's enough risk involved with both guys. But I think the strikeout rate, of course, knocks that batting average so far down. I think 253 is probably the ceiling for Buxton for a little while until he breaks out of it. I could see him easily going back to the 240 range just with the way he plays. Now, he's going to steal, like you said, so there's always value built in and inherently available for it. But if he does drop down to that 240 batting average range, that means he's a maybe sub-300 OBP guy. And there's just so much risk involved with him, whereas Pollock, it's all health-related. He's always going to hit if he plays, and we're another year removed from that horrible, horrible arm injury. So I like Pollock here in that regard, but I'm not going to scold anyone who takes Buxton over him.
And it's also a delicious fish, for whatever that's worth. So moving on to our third matchup here, we have Adam Eaton at 139 versus Eddie Rosario at 142. So using my best pronunciation there at Yancey, who do you got here, Adam Eaton or Eddie Rosario?
Adam actually has the same last name as I do. I don't know if you guys discerned that from...
What?
Yeah, I know. Huge if true, right?
Brother?
yeah. So this one's
I thought your last name was Rosario.
It is not.
Oh, man.
It is not. That would be cool, though. Yancey Rosario. Doesn't that sound awesome? That sounds like a porn star name.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet.
Like a flamingo.
Man, now
dancer.
You're going to make me hate my name. Yancey Rosario. Wow. Jesus. Speaking of Eddie Rosario, I live in Fort Myers, as we mentioned. You do too, Ron. You know, shout out 239. What's up? So the twins train here, the Miracle, and you know, their spring training is here in Fort Myers. So I get to see a lot of Twins games, unfortunately. It was kind of cool whenever they did have Buxton and Sano. And I remember last year watching one of the first spring training games, and I saw Eddie Rosario out in, I think it was like left field or something. I can't remember. I was drinking beers and stuff. And I said, "Hey, Eddie." And he looked back at me and he waved. And then, where am I going with this? So, all of a sudden, I liked Eddie Rosario.
He became your favorite player. He's like, he waved at me once. Yeah. Wow.
This sounds so stupid, but I'm just saying, I met C-Dick last year, guys, and he made it to the All-Star game. So, stranger things have happened, okay?
There you go.
But anyways, I met him, and I didn't meet him. He waved to me, right? And it kind of, like, put him on my radar. I know it sounds really, really stupid. But so, I kind of, like, was... keeping up, you know, keeping tabs on him and stuff like that. And, you know, he had a very, very pedestrian first half, but something clicked with him. I read a couple articles talking about, like, his plate approach, how, like, they were trying to teach him to be much more selective, which, to his credit, it does look like it actually worked. And, you know, he was a completely different player. So I kind of want to buy it, to be honest with you. I will say this with a caveat being Adam Eaton, like, I need to see him on the field. I need to see spring training. It's, you know, obviously coming back from it was a torn ACL, wasn't it? Not just the MCL, like a complete torn ACL.
Yeah.
You know, so much of his value is predicated on speed. I need to see that game action first. And, you know, if he comes in and he's firing on all cylinders and we don't see like him sitting, you know, all these different games and in and out of the lineup, you know, throughout spring, then I'm all systems aboard. Like, I really think that Adam Eaton can score like 125, 130 runs. Like, I'm not exaggerating. I still think that this offense, while maybe not as good as last year, it could be, you know, the Nationals lineup could be one of the top three or four in baseball. So I want Adam Eaton leading off if he is 100% healthy, but also saying, man, this is such a cop-out, but pleasantly surprised with Eddie Rosario. And I don't want to just base stuff off of like a second half split, but I think the changes were real. I'm going to go Eddie Rosario. Unless Adam Eaton looks fantastic in the spring, then it's Adam Eaton, but just barely.
Fun fact, I heard that Eddie Rosario likes to wave to his fans, so that's a cool thing, too.
Yeah, huge if true. That's so stupid. I hate myself. I don't know why I say so.
Well, okay, two things here. Number one, remind me off air to tell you the story of the nickname I have for Adam Eaton, because it's not really on air appropriate. There's a story behind it. Second of all...
No, we haven't had... Van bleep anything in a really long time.
Yeah, but this is like a long. Yeah, this is gonna be a long bleep. So anyway, so
talks about second, butts.
Yeah, a little bit. Second thing is don't Yancey. I know exactly what you're saying because I went to Rays Fest Saturday, and I got a fist bump from Steve Souza. That's the first thing I immediately texted these two guys like a little girl. So he's gonna go All-Star game. He's gonna be. Probably he might hit 50 homers this year because of that. So anyway, on to this. I don't understand the love affair with Adam Eaton. I look across his stats and I'm not really sure what he does that is so great. When I look, you know, the games played in a season, he's only got two games or two seasons where he's played above 123 games. He's only got a couple of seasons where he's stolen over 15 or more bases. He's only hit 14 home runs as far as his career high. I'm just not understanding where it is that he's such an asset to someone's lineup. I'm not maybe runs scored. He's in the 90s. That's a positive, I guess, kind of an underrated stat there. But I'm definitely going to go Eddie Rosario here. And I think that, you know, the 27 homers, you could see a few less than what you saw last year. But I like the lineup he's hitting in. I like the fact that his K rate's down around 18%. Could get double-digit steals there. You know, like I said, the lineup with Sano and with, you know, Buxton comes around and with Dozier, they have two Kennys in the lineup that could be power hitters. And so I like overall, Rosario, what you're getting at that ADP. I think that's a really solid value. But I'm just not seeing what the deal is with Adam Eaton.
Actually, I like Adam Eaton too. I owned him in the prestigious Dynasty Dynasty Baseball League last year, and I was just elated when he started off smoking hot. And so I had, you know, 120, like you were saying, Yancey, 120 runs in my sights. I'm like, this guy is going to be freaking sweet. Nationals offense is potent. And yeah, and then it all fell apart. So I've actually been an Adam Eaton fan for years, but I am going to go with Rosario in this one, just because, you know. Well,
go ahead and say it, you stupid homer. Say it.
No. Listen, I've cursed the name of Eddie Rosario more than I've ever said anything bad about Adam Eaton. Okay. I've seen a lot of bad defense and a lot of really bad swings from Eddie Rosario, but he seemed to get that figured out last year. And he did work a lot at the plate. He upped his contact 5% last year, up to 78%, cut his swings outside of the zone by 4%. Although, you know, 37% reach rate still is not great, but, also upped his hard contact even from the first half to the second half, from 28% to 35%. So I am believing in the changes that he made. Adam Eaton can score you a buttload of runs, and I would definitely give the stolen base advantage to Eaton. But I would just prefer the all-around contributions, I believe, of good old Eddie Rosario.
You know, I believe...
So we're going to go... Oh, I'm used to going last. Sorry.
Do I not get to say anything on this one? Fine. Let's move on.
Go eat some cheese, man.
Actually, that's okay. I'll go do that. That's perfectly fine. No, I don't know if I even want to say anything now. I've been forgotten about and passed over. I see how it is.
You guys always make me go last. I'm used to going last.
I feel like Van's a little more irritable than he normally is.
Well, I got up from a nap before we started. Yeah. So that's mostly it. I was fussy.
Okay. Gotcha.
Okay. I'm going to do my joke now that I'm allowed to do it. And that is that it's been said on this podcast before, and I know it for a fact because it used to be in the intro, that Eaton ain't cheating. So I just want to point that one out. Yes. First and foremost.
Thank you. Yes.
I think Eddie Rosario's power spike is somewhat legit, but perhaps not as legit as it appears to be. Yes, he made improvements in season last year, but the season as a whole, as far as hard contact, is the exact same as it was last year. And if you extrapolate the at-bats or the plate appearances out to, you know, an even amount, it doesn't quite equal the 27 home runs he hit this year. So I think he's more 20 homer power than he is 30 homer power, but he does have more than he used to. So I think there's a bit of value there. I will probably go with him just because the injury risk is still high with Eaton. But if I knew Adam Eaton was going to get 600 plate appearances this year, I'd take him in a heartbeat just because I really do like him. And in fact, you know who traded him to in the prestigious Dynasty Baseball League? That would be me. So I have him coming into this season. Gets on base a crazy amount. Hits for a little bit of pop and can steal bases. He kind of feels like Jesse Winker plus, like that kind of a profile, in that he's going to hit for a decent average. He's going to get on base, and he's going to give you some counting stats, but maybe not a lot. But I also don't think we've seen really a true Adam Eaton season. So hopefully that's going to happen this year.
I have to interrupt here just because I think that Jesse Winker plus is just Jesse Blinker.
Jesse Blinker. There you go. And that's
because he's closing both eyes, you see.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I get it. It's just not good.
It's not a good joke. So.
That fantastic.
I'm not going to pull that audio clip out and put it on reel at a later date. That's not going to happen.
I'm proud of it.
That
screw
sucked
you
all the air out of it. So why don't you just move on to the next segment?
Well, I'll move on to a break where I will make my own jokes and laugh at them myself. We'll be right back.
In every life we have some trouble. When you worry, you make it double. Don't worry. Be
nasty.
Don't worry. Be
nasty.
Hey, everybody, it's me, Joe Pisapia. Baseball is back. and so is the Fantasy Baseball Black Book 2018 edition. This year, I've got Paul Spohr doing the starting pitching chapter. I've got Jake Seeley doing outfield profiles. I got Sammy Reed doing DFS. We got championships waiting for you. Go get it right now, the Fantasy Baseball Black Book 2018, available on Amazon in paperback and for Kindle and on iTunes, because once you go Black Book, well, you know the rest.
All right, welcome back to the Nastiest of Casts. We're going to move on to bargains and busts, and we'll sling it to you here, Yancey Eaton. Pick a couple guys in the top 40. Give us who you're looking to target in drafts this year.
In the top 40? Really quickly, I know this is kind of cheating. I was hoping, the first time I checked the Fantrax ADP, I was hoping that his ADP would go up so I could talk about him. Right now he sits at, I know it's petty, but right now he sits at 42. But this is a little bit of a homer pick, but Nathan already established tonight that that's totally acceptable. Kevin Kiermaier, guys. Kevin Kiermaier, everybody, he was kind of like the trendy sleeper pick. A lot of people were talking about as like an out, you know, like an outfield three or outfield four, especially in rotisserie leagues where like he does steal, he does hit for a little bit of power. He got hurt. He missed a large chunk of the season, and then everybody forgot about him. Well, he's completely healthy, and you know the situation is just as good as the year before. Yeah, everybody's completely forgotten about him. I've made a cottage industry about jumping on people that everybody kind of fell off of because of, you know, failed missed expectations kind of thing. This year, like, nobody wants, like, Michael Franco, and for some reason, I kind of want him, and I don't really have a reason why. It's just almost like a game theory kind of standpoint, like in DFS. Kevin Kiermaier kind of that same way. He bats leadoff almost every single day, even whenever they're facing lefties. He's one of the best defenders in the game. If not the best, he's going to play every single game. And he made real strides as far as like plate approach and everything last year. I just think he's being completely overlooked at 42, but that is technically cheating. I will say Gregory Polanco, much of a similar situation. 2 years ago, he was gangbusters. He had 39 homers plus steals. You know, this is a monster of a man. He is an absolute physical specimen. You know, everybody is down on him. Everybody forgot about him. He's going to come back. And I'm weirdly into this Pirates outfield, like really into it, you know, even including, you know, all their guys, which is like really strange because you would think like losing McCutcheon, you would think that it would just kind of like ruin any glimmer that you'd have with him. But same situation. I think Gregory Polanco is just like an absolute steal. He's outfield 38 right now, which is just absolutely insane. Overall ADP is at 160. I think that's going to climb a lot because I've started hearing a lot of people talk about him, and it's just somebody that I'm going to be gravitating towards. And then lastly, I don't know if I'm going to steal you guys. I tried to pick people that I haven't really heard a lot of other analysts talk about, but remember whenever Kyle Schwarber was like a top 35 pick? Remember that? Wasn't that fun? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, obviously he sustained an injury, whatnot. I don't like to buy into the, you know, the whole preseason hype train as far as like athletes working out and stuff, but I have read a couple articles. I've seen a lot of videos where this guy has been doing nothing but working out, working on agility and defense, and really trying to make it to where he is a asset on the field and not an off, you know, like a defensive liability. Even if he's remotely close to league average, he's going to play a lot more. The bat is still there. This is one of those quote unquote transcendent, you know, talents at hitting, one of the best pure hitters in the minors. And I was never a fan before whenever his ADP was out of control, but right now you can get him for basically like 155 to, you know, pick 160. I just think there's so much value there. Like the hitter is still there. Path to playing time. I still think it's there. I don't know. I want to buy whenever everybody is selling. And I think Kyle Schwarber is like the perfect opportunity for me. So that was a couple of my buys right at the very end of the top 40.
Yeah, I like that Schwarber pick. If you can get him at a nice value, that's somebody that, yeah, I've read the same thing, and he could be in line. Even if he doesn't get everyday playing time, I think he's still in line to really help you out with some homers. I like the guy right before him as number 35, Ender Inciarte, and I like the lineup he hits in. I like the fact he's hitting at the top of the lineup. He's going to be a nice addition for some runs scored. Not going to give you a ton of pop there. Maybe 15 homer upside is about what you're going to get. I do like the fact, you know, we alluded to it earlier. Yancey, you alluded to it earlier, the fact you're trying to get steals anywhere you can and kind of piece it together. And even Lenny said that last week. Lenny, you know, he's trying to get steals about every position you can get. If you can get 10 here, 15 here, 20 here, I think it's a pretty safe bet. Ender Inciarte is going to get 22 steals there. I like the fact he's got Freddie Freeman hitting behind him. Ozzie Albies is another guy behind him that we can't sleep on. And I like the fact that he hit 326 at the new park last year. So Inciarte is a guy I like. And then real quick, a guy that I think could, I don't know necessarily if I'd call him a bargain, but I think if he keeps his nose clean, he could definitely outperform his ADP. And that's Yasiel Puig. It seemed like he had a really quiet.
Like it.
I wondered if this was going to be a cocaine joke, and then it turned out to be a cocaine joke.
Sure.
Keep his nose clean. Anybody?
Well, I mean, you're just kind of being. I kind of use that as just, you know, staying out of trouble, I guess. You know, not getting pulled over down here, going like 120 miles an hour in a 25 mile an hour zone or something ridiculous like that, like you did a couple of years ago. So, I think that 20 homers or 25 homers, 20 steals, 280 average, 350 OBP. Is definitely upside there. Could be more than that. He's only 27. He's another one of these guys. To me, it feels like he's been around for a way longer time than he really has. So I don't know necessarily if he's. I think he's decent right there at that ADP, but I think he could definitely outperform that spot.
I'm already worried about Puig. I believe I took him in the Fantrax staff league, which drafted over the past couple of weeks and
years.
Recently. Yeah, seemingly. That took a long time. But back to Puig, his representatives, his agents or whatever, recently just dropped him. And supposedly it was due to character issues or something behavioral that he did, which that news has yet to break. But for them to just flat drop him like that has to be really bad.
Yeah, something big's going to come down because of this. I really think we're going to have a story within the next month or two that is really damning for Puig, because this is kind of unprecedented, I would think, as far as it goes. Particularly with a guy who's close to free agency, it's going to be earning your agency money soon.
Well, you got to think of how this is going to happen, right? Somebody, a reporter, a local beat writer, they're going to ask Puig a question. He's going to say something defamatory about the agency, and then they're going to leak all kinds of information about him. So trust me, it's going to get out. We're going to find out exactly what happened with it. And hopefully it's just like a character thing. It's just like a personality, like a, you know, like personal differences or character flaws type of thing. And hopefully it wasn't that he did something like really, really like disgusting or messed up to like another human being. That's what I'm hoping for, because I found myself weirdly like a Puig like defender. Like I used to hate him, but then everybody started hating him. I was like, hey, why is everybody hating him? And you know, it's kind of like A-Rod. Like I used to hate A-Rod, and now like I love him, and now everybody's starting to love him again. I'm like, you know what, screw that guy, like I hate A-Rod again. You know what I mean? Not to be like a fantasy hipster, but I don't know how we got talking on this, but I totally agree with the Yasiel Puig stuff. He's weirdly underrated, and I think depending on how you feel about him like as a person, like really affects your draft process. Like I've noticed that a lot in chats and stuff like that. Somebody will take Puig, and you always see like one person like, you know, screw Puig, or I hate Puig, or you know, F that fool kind of thing. That's real. People really do that.
Well, and I thought that he was, you know, I liked his value, his ADP before this all came out. You know, if he was going to hit 25 home runs and steal 10 bags with a decent average where he was going, I thought that was pretty nice. And now I am just afraid to touch him. You know, if there is a suspension of some sort, that kind of tends to come along slowly. So who's to say that it would even happen this year? But it's just got me scared off right now. So unless his stock or his price drops, I think I'm just going to stay away from him for the time being. Two of my guys, my bargains have already been touched upon. Gregory Polanco, could not agree more. I think last year was just a lost season thanks to injury. And so I'm banking on a pretty big bounce back from him. Eddie Rosario, I like his price tag. And then so far in drafts, between mock drafts and real drafts, I'm just going to end up with either Starling Marte or Byron Buxton around their ADP, because both of them offer quite a bit of stolen base upside and some combination of at least like average-ish batting average and power. So right at that spot, I always seem to be gravitating towards one of those guys. And I don't hate their value there at all.
And okay, so you guys have established that we can do the homer pick. So as an Angels fan, boy, do I have a homer pick for you. Going at the scant price of number one overall, there's this outfielder. He has no neck, but he's really, really good. So keep an eye out for that Trout fella. I think he's going to do good moves.
I really thought you were going to talk up Calhoun. I was like, what are we doing?
No, no, I'm done with Calhoun. He's fine, but I like him as a baseball player, but I don't want him on my fantasy team. I don't think
he might.
I thought
maybe
they signed Peter Borges again or something.
There you go.
Gary Matthews
Honestly,
Jr.
All jokes aside, Cole Calhoun might stumble into like 100 runs and 100 RBI just by being on that team.
Yeah, just being there. Yeah,
that is a weird thing that can happen. If Albert Pujols can literally score like, or you know, bat in 100 RBI, like that's something that could happen for Cole Calhoun.
Indeed, yeah.
Dan, what was that? What was that fellow's name again?
Who? Mike Trout? Oh, that guy. Yeah, yeah. Tim Salmon. That's it. Yeah.
Okay, write it down.
And you guys mentioned Polanco. I just want to point out, have you seen this picture that's circulating of Polanco working out in the off season? He's got like the two ropes or whatever, and he's wearing like a Bane mask. It's really bizarre, but he looks good. So I like him as well. I actually put JD Martinez on my list. I know it's weird to have a bargain that early at pick 25, but if he does what he does and if he has a full season, I mean, he could produce top 10 value. So I think that could really actually be a bargain. Yoenis Cespedes at 23. I kind of like him as a little bit of a bargain this year. I don't think he's going to really go back to being a 340 homer guy, but I think he's going to produce really good power numbers and an okay average for the draft position. And then lastly, I just kind of wanted to point out Manny Margot. He's going as the 33rd outfielder at pick 146. I think he could really suck, but I also think the stolen base upside is really high. And at this point in the draft, I'd be more than happy to take a flyer on him and see if you could get 20, 30 stolen bases, see what happens.
Very good. Yancey, we'll go back to you. We're going to go to our top 40 outfielder busts now. So who are you avoiding in drafts this year?
Like, who has the biggest boobs? That's what we're asking you.
Right. Interesting. Bust. I get it. Clever. Very, very clever. Golf club.
I had the best joke of the night, damn it. Jesse Blinker was hilarious.
Yeah. Very good. Okay. Wow. Where are we? Okay. So where do I start? I don't know. I had like 19 names written down, but I'll start with one. Okay. So this whole outfield situation with the Brewers is really, really tilting to me. I want to assume that the Brewers are going to do what makes the most sense for the franchise and trade Ryan Braun, and thus opening up all this playing time for Domingo Santana, who was quietly like awesome as hell last year. But right now it does look like he's been subjugated to a fourth outfielder role. And, you know, Santana is basically going to like supplant him whenever he's injured or, you know, Braun needs off days or what have you. I don't like that situation, and as such, like, I don't like where both of those players are being drafted. I feel like it's just there's so many other outfielders that you can take with very similar production where you don't have that mysterious playing time conundrum looming over your head. I know, like, playing time battles always, like, work themselves out or whatever, but Ryan Braun is being paid so much money, he is going to be playing if he is still in the Brewers. So that's kind of an avoid for me solely because of that. We mentioned AJ Pollock at 15th overall for outfielders. That's something I just need to stay away from. And then Byron Buxton, too. Like I said, I get it. I understand why people are gravitating towards him, because they want to make sure that they have him in case he does go off, right? I've been overdrafting Giancarlo Stanton for 4 years because I firmly believed he was going to hit 50 home runs in a season, and he did. But I took all those L's all those past seasons because he didn't. Just as like an aside, I want to talk about one really quick little thing. Alex Chamberlain, he wrote an article the other day, and he was talking, he does like the blind player resumes, which is literally like one of my favorite series ever. Two players. Okay. Very, very quickly. Player one is projected, going by, you know, Steamer projections. He is projected for 630 plate appearances, 22 home runs, 80 runs scored, 23 stolen bases, a 255, 316, 440 slash, right? I know that's a lot, but 255, 316, 440. Player two is projected for the exact same number of plate appearances, three less homers, four less runs scored, three less stolen bases. He's going to have a 257, so slightly higher batting average, a better OBP, and almost identical slugging percentage, right? One is being taken at 51st overall, and that is Byron Buxton. The other one is taken 104 picks later, and that's Kevin Kiermaier. Identical slash lines, almost identical playing time, everything like that. And one is literally, you know, one of your first three or four picks. Like, I just don't understand why we're so okay with just drafting him, assuming that he's going to be good. It's much like Acuna too. Like, we're going to be doing that with him all offseason too. I thought all of you guys would be talking about him tonight, but good on you guys for just not buying it. Acuna is going to struggle. I think he's a good player. I don't think he's going to bust. But like with Buxton, we've still never seen a complete season of Buxton being very, very good. And he's being drafted right at the top 50. And I just don't buy it. So those are a couple players that I'm staying away from. And also, I'm not buying like the McCutcheon is going to like be rejuvenated in San Francisco, one of the worst ballparks for right-handed power in the game. I'm just not buying that train either. So those are a couple of names I got, guys.
I think that I agree with that with Acuna, and I love Acuna like crazy. I think everybody does, but I think that, you know, combine the age with the fact that, you know, he's going to be probably called up pretty soon this year. I think you got to really temper your expectations anything outside of a dynasty. Another guy that I'll throw on this list too that I talked about all the reasons before. Adam Eaton is a guy that I think is gonna bust. He's a guy that I'm definitely not in on. He's got some pretty talented guys behind him that could challenge him for a spot as well, because they have a pretty crowded outfield also. Not to the point I think that they're going to have the issues like they have in Milwaukee, because I think a lot of their talent are guys that they can keep down when you talk about Robles mainly. And then the last guy that I was wanting to throw out there was ADP 30, Marwin Gonzalez. And Marwin Gonzalez is a guy that I like if you can get him at a nice value. But I think that Derek Fisher is really going to push him for that left field spot. And I think it's going to kind of force him into a utility role because he has all that multi-position eligibility anyway. But when you look on the depth chart for the Astros anyway, when you look at just the fielding depth chart, Marwin Gonzalez is the backup for pretty much every spot anyway. So I think that he might still get a decent amount of playing time. But I think that if Derek Fisher has a nice spring, I think he's going to be the guy in left field. And I think it might force Marwin to just kind of a super utility role. So I don't know necessarily if he would justify having that 30 outfielder ADP coming off the board.
Yeah, I'm not buying him either. My busts, I also had Domingo Santana and two other guys, Ian Desmond at the 29th outfielder on Fantrax, ADP 126 overall. He's 32 now, missed 67 games with injury last year. Doesn't walk a lot. Last year, his hard contact percentage was just 27%, his lowest since 2011. His ground ball rate shot up to nearly 10% at 63% ground balls last year. I mean, granted, Coors is nice, but, what's he going to do, like 15-15, something like that? I think that you can get that much later in drafts, so I'm not too crazy about Ian Desmond there at outfield for 29. And then another guy just that I'll mention before I kick it to you, Van. I'm not sure I'm confident taking Tommy Pham as the 70th player off the board, outfielder 19. And I believe in everything he did. I'm bought in on him. But at the same time, I'm just worried about, it's the whole vision thing, right? If that goes again, supposedly he's learned how to manage it. But if he hasn't, if something goes awry there, then he could just totally fall apart. And so I do like him and I am in on him. I believe in what he did last year. But at the same time, there's just enough risk where I don't know if I can invest in him too much. He's one of those guys where I'll probably just have him in like I want to own him in like one league out of my however million I'm in, just so I can own a little bit of him. But for the most part, it just represents a little bit too much risk for me.
Two things really quickly, Nate. One, I think with Ian Desmond, a lot of people are going to use him as first base because I think that position's a lot shallower than outfield. So like if you're drafting him, he's probably going to be your
great
first baseman.
So you're getting 20 home runs for your first baseman. That's fantastic.
I know. I'm just saying that, like, if that's your thing, if you're drafting him, I still think he's a stay away, but, that's neither here nor there. Second, okay. Like, you don't like Tommy Pham, like, you're, like, an eye doctor now or something? Like, I had to Google, I can't remember if it's optometrist or ophthalmologist. I know it's one of those two, and that's what I was going to say, but I couldn't remember. But, he's got it under control, and he had an amazing season out of nowhere. I know it's kind of hard to believe, but you got to understand, like, he was like a fourth outfielder. He was like a very good, slightly above league average player with all of these conditions. He finally gets that stuff rectified. And even though it is degenerative and it's going to be something he's going to have to manage, like, I feel like he's figured it out and I'm willing to bank on that. And it's not like he's going super expensive to where he's a full stay away from me. Like, I actually think there's a ton of value in where he's going. Like, my dream outfield is like, obviously I want like Stanton or something for power, but like if I can't get like the big dogs, like a Judge, a Stanton, a JD Martinez, those kinds of guys, like I literally want like Pham, Yelich. I want, like Benintendi. That would be a absolute dream for me. All these guys that could do like 25, 20, 30, 30, 25, 30, 20. I just think he's awesome. I really do. And I hate the Cardinals like with a fire passion for no reason whatsoever as a Rays fan, but I just want to see him succeed. And I think he's going to.
And I will say, like, if you're in a shallower league, if you're playing in an ESPN standard, like 10 team league, that's where I'm going to be more apt to take a Tommy Pham, where I can just plug somebody else off the wire. If Pham does sort of run into those issues again and he's just not doing it, then it's pretty easy to cut bait in a shallow league, like a 10 to 12 team league. Whereas yeah, sure. The risk will get you a lot more if if you're in a 20 team league, like a lot of listeners play in something that deep, that's a lot of risk. If you take a bust at that point, that's going to set you pretty far back.
I guess it's my turn. I forgot. you guys pretty much covered everything. I wanted to point out Buxton at 16. It's too much for me. And Acuna was really the guy I wanted to talk about. Just to read a quick slash line here for you, in 135 plate appearances, this player I'm talking about hit 220, 281, 390, and that's his very first taste of the major leagues, and that's Mike Trout. So even the greatest baseball player on the planet right now struggled in his first attempt at baseball, and I think this is just far too soon to be taking a flyer on a player like this. The upside's big, but is it really that big if you're taking him that high? So I'm going to avoid Acuna at that spot with every single league I'm in. I mean, the only reason I would have him is if I have him in a dynasty league. I am not going to be drafting him really at any point. Just because of what you're going to have to pay to get him, and you don't know what you're going to get out of it.
Can I ask you guys, can I go off script really quickly and just ask you guys one question?
No.
Nate, can I?
Yes.
No? Okay.
Do it.
Who are, like, can you give me, like, two names in the outfield? And it doesn't necessarily have to be top 40, but who are two of, like, your fantasy boyfriends where, like, you really want them on your team and you're not going to, like, really go crazy as far as reaching for them, but you really want these guys on your team? Do you guys have anybody like that?
Christian Yelich. That's my guy. I love Christian Yelich, and I have for years. I've always wanted him on my team. This is the first time that the price might be getting a little too high because people are actually overrating him because of the Brewers trade.
Right. What about you, Ron?
I was going to say Yelich as well. So we're going to have like a weird Christian Yelich, like love triangle, I guess, or something. I don't know. Along those lines, I don't know. Guy you mentioned earlier that, we're a couple Rays fans here, is Corey Dickerson's a guy that I've been trying to get a lot of different places as well. I don't know if that's more of a homer thing than anything else, as far as trying to draft him, but I would say Yelich, Corey Dickerson, and then another guy that we'll probably talk about next week that I'm high on this coming year is Willie Calhoun as well.
Okay, what about you, Nate?
Yeah, mine unfortunately are not cheap. Like Mookie Betts, I am going to try to own him everywhere this year. I think that, like, his Fantrax ADP right now is 4, and a lot of drafts he is going towards the back end of the first round, and I would, I should say outfielder 4, so his ADP overall is 9.29, and I think that's just a filthy steal. But JD Martinez is my boyfriend. I own him in all my dynasty leagues, and I'm going to hopefully own him in some redraft leagues this year as well. So hopefully he finds a friggin' team. But what about you? I mean, obviously C-Dick, right?
C-Dick, yeah. I like where C-Dick's going. You know, like I said, he was an all-star last year. For most of the season, he was hitting above 300. He kind of fell off in the second half, obviously, but that was kind of to be expected. But, I mean, he's going as outfielder 50. I don't hate that at all. I've been talking to Sammy and Vlad Sedler, who obviously both have been on the show before. Aaron Hicks getting a lot of hype. A lot of people seem to think that Aaron Hicks is going to really break out. I haven't really done a deep dive into it, but I trust, like, my peers a lot. So that's kind of somebody I'm keeping in the back of my mind. As far as other names, like I mentioned, Kevin Kiermaier, he's basically free. So, like, I want him on a lot of teams. And, like, he's a nice fallback option with steals, which is really hard to find. Christian Yelich, I've already drafted twice this season. So, obviously, I'm on board there. And then, let me see if there's one more name really quickly. What are you guys doing about the Philly outfield situation? I feel like there's kind of too many names there, and that's why, like, Nick Williams and Aaron Altera are, like, so close. Do you think somebody gets moved, or, like, what are they doing there? Because I really want to like Nick Williams, and I really want to like Altera, but right now I'm just kind of worried, like, there isn't a path of playing time. What do you guys think?
I have an affinity for Aaron Altera just because in one of my deeper leagues, I was able to pluck him off waivers for absolutely nothing, and he's paid dividends for me. So I'm going to pull for him a little bit more. But, I mean, I don't know. I think he'd probably be my favorite guy because I don't know if I've seen enough of – of course, then again, the sample size is kind of limited with Altera too, but I don't think I've seen enough of Nick Williams to really make a fair judgment, I guess. So I guess I'm an Altera guy more than I am a Nick Williams guy.
Fair enough.
I'm not a Nick Williams guy at all. He's one of those terrible play discipline guys. And I've never been a fan, even as he was a prospect. I'm not going to start now. Of anybody, maybe Odubel Herrera, I think, could have a nice bounce back this year.
He had a fantastic second half. I like that.
25 steals a couple seasons ago as well.
Mm-hmm. Cool. I'm sorry to like hijack the show. I know this is not like how we thought things would go, so I'll just stop talking.
Well, I want to bring it back too, because you mentioned a name that I'm really high on to, and I actually kind of wanted to say it earlier, but I didn't. But that's Aaron Hicks. This to me with Aaron Hicks, and I've said this on this show and every show I've been on, feels like a Carlos Gomez style breakout. They're kind of similar players in that they
can hit
for power, hit for speed. They don't walk quite as much as you would like, but they're good potential batting average guys. Now, we haven't quite seen that from exactly. Former Twins. We haven't quite seen the batting average from Hicks, but I really like that. And I think that's exactly what we're looking at with Hicks. So I think there's a lot of good potential here. The problem I have is that that Yankees lineup is so good that he's going to bat, what, seventh, eighth? So maybe your counting stats are going to take a bit of a hit with him. But if you're getting him late enough, it'll be a valuable pick anyway.
Awesome stuff. Yancey, thank you so much for joining us. Go ahead and pump your Twitter account and any plugs. Anything else that you've been working on that you want to notify all our listeners about?
Sure. So thank you for having me, guys. Likewise. Ron, this is the first time we've been on a pod together. This was, I hope it was as good for you as it was for me.
I enjoyed it thoroughly. I'm smoking a cigarette as we speak.
I hope. Okay.
So you're like Tim McLeod.
oh, my gosh. I love you guys. I'm on Twitter at Yancey Eaton. DMF has been on a little bit of a hiatus. We did football last year. We had to take off just because my house got destroyed by a hurricane. And I don't need to be hyperbolic. It wasn't destroyed. I had a lot of water damage. But Dear Mr. Fantasy Podcast will be back very, very soon. Jason is getting married and going on a honeymoon. But once he comes back, we will be doing the positional previews very, very soon. So check out Dear Mr. Fantasy wherever you guys get your podcasts. Other than that, I'm probably going to be doing a little bit of fantasy writing this year, which is something new. But my wife figured out that I can get tax write-offs for trips that I take if I say that it's for work as a freelancer. We're going to be doing that a lot. So you guys can just find me on Twitter and I'll link out anything that I do end up writing. But seriously, guys, you guys know this. You guys are my homeboys. Nate, you and I go back. I love being on the show. Thank you for having me on every single season. I know I'm not the most articulate. I'm not the most insightful or the most intelligent, but I really enjoy doing these podcasts with you guys. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Save your receipts. If you're doing the travel and the tax write-off, save your receipts. I was a freelancer and have done freelancing for many, many, many years, and they will call you out on it. Save your receipts. Keep your documentation. You'll be in good shape.
Thanks, Mom.
Wow. Yeah, we got some real honest tax advice on this episode of the Nasty
Cat. Oh, yes.
That was the last thing that I had checked on this list that we had to talk. Like,
Nailed it.
I checked the box on horrible jokes, some outfield analysis, but tax preparation was just, I didn't think we'd get to it. We managed to do it. So thank you so much, Yancey. It's always a highlight of my season, honestly, getting to talk to you. So I love it. We'll definitely have you on again very soon. And you mentioned actually Vlad Sedler before. He, believe it or not, he has never been on the Nasty Cast, but he will break that streak of 142 episodes missed next week as he joins us to talk about deep outfielders outside of the top 40 from Fantrax. So look for that coming out. Until then, may the fantasy gods shine upon you.